Planeando acciones para llegar a conseguir esta consigna que nos planteamos, que es nuevamente la reducción del pasaje a 2.000 y posteriormente entablar la conversación para conseguir boleto universitario.
Tanto estudiantes, ¿verdad?, gremios, movimientos, empezamos a convocarnos a preparar, a pensar en la idea de un espacio colectivo, ¿verdad?, que nos pueda aglutinar en cuanto a las necesidades, no solamente como estudiantes universitarios, sino también como pueblo y como ciudadanía, ¿verdad?
Para tener una comparación, amigos y amigas, un pasaje de 2.000 guaraníes sería como 50 centavos de dólar, y el aumento es de 10 centavos. En relación al cambio, el pasaje hoy día en Paraguay en dólar estaría en 60 centavos. Desde Radio Fe y Alegría, informó Javier Benítez.
Un informe del Instituto Nacional de Migración de México revela que más de 322.000 migrantes indocumentados mexicanos fueron deportados de Estados Unidos en 2013. El reporte agrega que entre ellos casi 16.900 corresponden a menores de edad. Según el IMM, de todos los menores de 18 años, más de 14.500 eran mujeres y más de 2.300 de sexo masculino. En la República Argentina, las comunidades originarias libran una lucha cuesta arriba para proteger sus derechos. Claudio Andrés de Luca, de Radio Comunitaria Aire Libre, informa.
Los desafíos de estos tiempos son que un marco ideológico sea el buen vivir. Creemos que estos debates o estos problemas tienen que ver con el modelo económico en el que estamos enfrascados, con un capitalismo salvaje, con un capitalismo que vea los territorios solo como un recurso económico a explotar, y nosotros vemos a la madre tierra como una obligación moral de cuidar y de proteger entre todos.
Es el sentimiento de toda una nación. Así lo expresaba Natalia Zarapura del Consejo de Naciones Aborígenes de Jujuy. Mientras el Rally Dakar 2014 llega a su fin, el domingo pasado comunidades e integrantes del pueblo Colla fueron reprimidos por las fuerzas de seguridad. Realizaban una manifestación en el territorio de Rumicruz. Pedían que se respeten los derechos colectivos y de preexistencia de los pueblos indígenas y naciones originarias, tales como el derecho a la consulta, al consentimiento previo, libre e informado. En ningún momento fueron consultados si autorizaban el paso de los vehículos por su territorio. La policía local cortó el camino en inmediaciones de la entrada a la comunidad de Tabladitas y prohibió el paso.
Cuando llegaron dijeron que tienen 10 minutos para despejar todo. Entonces ellos le dijeron, bueno, que estaban manifestándose, que querían hablar, que se trató esa cuestión. Entonces no han pasado ni 3, 4 minutos y directamente empezaron a disparar y a agarrar a la otra gente que estaba ahí, digamos, directamente lo agarraron. Y de la peor forma, ¿no? Porque lo agarraban, lo pegaban, lo tiraban, lo ponían a las esposas y lo llevaban al móvil, ¿no? O sea.
Así se expresó el alcalde del Aguilar, Sergio Laguna, que estaba de paso por el lugar y también fue detenido. Natalia Zarapura contó que lograron que el Rally Dakar no pase por sus comunidades, avasallando flora, fauna y sitios arqueológicos. A los detenidos se les inició una causa judicial.
Nosotros estamos acompañando a los hermanos que fueron detenidos como organización, como pueblos indígenas, vamos a defender su proceso y estamos llamando la atención del Estado Nacional, porque también es responsabilidad haber autorizado el DACA, haber negociado como una estrategia de turismo, y también del Estado Provincial de garantizar los mecanismos adecuados.
En defensa de sus derechos, destacan que los organizadores del rally y los empresarios que financian esta actividad solo buscan garantizar un negocio millonario y que las comunidades y paisajes sean solo una mercancía turística para unos pocos. Y al mismo tiempo, Zarapura observó que este suceso sienta un precedente más de criminalización indígena en la provincia de Jujuy. Desde Argentina fue el informe de Claudio Andrés de Luca, Radio Comunitaria Aire Libre.
Un informe del Instituto Nacional de Migración de México revela que más de 322.000 migrantes indocumentados mexicanos fueron deportados de Estados Unidos en 2013. El reporte agrega que entre ellos casi 16.900 corresponden a menores de edad. Según el IMM, de todos los menores de 18 años, más de 14.500 eran mujeres y más de 2.300 de sexo masculino. En la República Argentina, las comunidades originarias libran una lucha cuesta arriba para proteger sus derechos. Claudio Andrés de Luca, de Radio Comunitaria Aire Libre, informa.
Los desafíos de estos tiempos son que un marco ideológico sea el buen vivir. Creemos que estos debates o estos problemas tienen que ver con el modelo económico en el que estamos enfrascados, con un capitalismo salvaje, con un capitalismo que vea los territorios solo como un recurso económico a explotar, y nosotros vemos a la madre tierra como una obligación moral de cuidar y de proteger entre todos.
Es el sentimiento de toda una nación. Así lo expresaba Natalia Zarapura, del Consejo de Naciones Aborígenes de Jujuy, mientras el Rally Dakar 2014 llega a su fin. El domingo pasado, comunidades e integrantes del pueblo Colla fueron reprimidos por las fuerzas de seguridad. Realizaban una manifestación en el territorio de Rumicruz. Pedían que se respeten los derechos colectivos y de preexistencia de los pueblos indígenas y naciones originarias, tales como el derecho a la consulta, al consentimiento previo, libre e informado. En ningún momento fueron consultados si autorizaban el paso de los vehículos por su territorio. La policía local cortó el camino en inmediaciones de la entrada a la comunidad de Tabladitas y prohibió el paso.
Cuando llegaron dijeron que tienen 10 minutos para despejar todo. Y entonces ellos le dijeron, bueno, que estaban manifestándose, que querían hablar, que es toda esa cuestión. Entonces no han pasado ni 3, 4 minutos y directamente empezaron a disparar y a agarrar a la otra gente que estaba ahí, digamos, directamente lo agarraron. Y de la peor forma, ¿no? Porque lo agarraban, lo pegaban, lo tiraban, lo ponían a las esposas y lo llevaban al móvil, ¿no? O sea.
Así se expresó el alcalde del Aguilar, Sergio Laguna, que estaba de paso por el lugar y también fue detenido. Natalia Zarapura contó que lograron que el Rally Dakar no pase por sus comunidades, avasallando flora, fauna y sitios arqueológicos. A los detenidos se les inició una causa judicial.
Nosotros estamos acompañando a los hermanos que fueron detenidos como organización, como pueblos indígenas, vamos a defender su proceso y estamos llamando la atención del Estado Nacional, porque también es responsabilidad haber autorizado el DACA, haber negociado como una estrategia de turismo, y también del Estado Provincial de garantizar los mecanismos adecuados.
En defensa de sus derechos, destacan que los organizadores del rally y los empresarios que financian esta actividad solo buscan garantizar un negocio millonario y que las comunidades sean ansía turística para unos pocos. Y al mismo tiempo, Zarapura observó que este suceso sienta un precedente más en la Jujuy. De Claudio Andrés de Luca, Radio Comunitaria Aire Libre.
Más noticias de México: la desaparición de grandes sumas de dinero en el gobierno del estado de Veracruz está generando interrogantes. Sandra Luz Cruz, de Radio Guayacocotla, amplía la información.
Hay 7,000 millones de pesos del Fondo de Desastres Naturales, el Fonden, desaparecidos en el estado de Veracruz, dicen diputados. Diputados locales de este estado de Veracruz, de la 63 legislatura, dijeron que hay obras pendientes del Fondo de Desastres Naturales, mejor conocido como Fonden, desde hace 7 años, y que nadie sabe dónde quedó el dinero que se destinó para atender las afectaciones por los fenómenos climáticos. Fue el diputado del Partido del Trabajo, el PT, Fidel Robles Guadarrama, quien señaló que el rezago...
Y discúlpeme, amigos, pero eso es todo para la programa en español. Posiblemente en la lectura, a mi español, posiblemente will become mejor, and perhaps puedo obtener un translator, un hombre que se puede traducir. Entonces, a este momento, and now we are moving into Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'll be with you for 2 hours. I am, of course, a regular broadcaster, Robert Norse. And, hey, stay tuned for the usual fun and games, lots of interviews, many of them very recent, even from yesterday. Well, I'll be hoping you'll kind of do your bit by calling in with your thoughts, your experiences, and your updates. Sounds like we may need a slight technical alteration here to turn things around. Edition or repetition of Land by Five. You are, of course, tuned to 101.3 FM, freakradio.org if you're streaming, or if you're streaming us. And the name of the show is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Today, of course, is January 16th, 2014, and weeks are just beginning to slip by in 2014 and getting used to writing the date at the top of wherever. And we'll be hearing some more Annie DeFranco during the program, picking up from last time from her album Buffalo, April 22nd, 2012. But right now, I'm going to turn to an incident that happened yesterday when I and activist Pat Colby were walking back from the metro, where Pat was researching a problem that had happened to Laura Boyd, a woman who reported a rather serious incident of what she described as discrimination. Actually, it was also characterized as theft at the metro by the authorities. And Pat went through a process of speaking with superiors, trying to get the information, and we may go into that later. But what you're now about to hear is what happened as the two of us walked about a block from the metro up Pacific Avenue, passing parking lot 12, which is the lot adjacent to the metro and to the Tampico restaurant. And I'll kind of both let this interview speak for itself and occasionally speak for it by interrupting. If you want to call in at any point with your own thoughts, you can. 831-427-3772 is the call-in number. Again, 831-427-3772. And, hey, do that if you feel you have something you want to contribute or you've got a question you want to ask, a gripe, or whatever. This is community radio as well as my show, so let's make use of it.
So we're here at near the Tampico kitchen and lounge. We have a police officer apparently writing something or interrogating an individual at the free parking lot number 12. There are an officer, looks like a CSO, and a police officer, another one standing off to the side.
See, he was bit at someone, so I wouldn't go petting him.
And there's a dog attached to a leash on a pole. And we have officer, looks like 157, 107, I'm not sure. Nice looking pooch.
Yeah, friendly too.
Yeah. And looks like some kind of a card is being filled out. It's about 2:10. With me is Pat Colby. And there's another.
And the female police officer was talking with a woman seated on the ground next to her dog, who was tied to a pole. And apparently we learned that the woman had been there for half an hour, at least according to that woman's account. And there were a total of three police officers, including a drive-along, whom I recognized as the woman from the city council offices, who often is helpful to me in trying to dig up Public Records Act requests or pass on files. I don't think she actually does the digging, but she's the sort of person who passes them on. Her name is Becky, and she's a friendly enough person. In this case, she was just an observer, as were myself and Pat Colby, as well as Colin Campbell Clyde, who happened by as well. And we're going to hear more of that.
Obviously, to our community service officer, and
the officer apparently is trying to document some status which the person has. He returns the ID to the sidewalk. We have a Central Police Officer 157 vigorously chewing gum like I am.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I don't. Yeah.
We're just, you know, observing.
So I see you're a civilian from your tag here.
Yes, I'm a ride-along today.
How, and what have you seen? Any exciting adventures? Normally, you're working in the city council offices.
Right, so this is my first time. So.
You've given me many a public record in the past.
That's right.
And Officer Cross is observing as the doggy is getting his belly scratched, or perhaps his shoulder.
The puppy didn't bite anybody, did it?
Incident probably involved the dog, according to the woman who owns him.
I'm making a big mountain out of the molehill.
Yeah.
So there was no contact.
There was no contact?
There was no bite.
What a waste of time.
And a passerby says, of course, she's a dog lover. What a waste of time.
Depending on how you come to them.
Yeah, I think he was a little bit afraid, maybe, in that kind of way.
And apparently the incident, which I will explain, I imagine, later on the tape, involves a dog snapping as a police officer sort of turned abruptly and approached her and the dog. And that precipitated this half-hour detention of the woman and the dog, if these times and if the account is accurate. The police didn't give us any account of it, of course, but we just got the account from the woman who was sitting on the sidewalk, detained by the police, told she couldn't leave, nor could she take her dog. This kind of disturbed a few passers-by who heard about this, but there weren't people watching in any continuous way when Pat Colby and I arrived and Colin Campbell Clyde arrived later.
You want to say anything for free radio? I do a radio show on this kind of stuff.
I don't know. I can't.
What's the name of it?
Having the best day, so this is like...
I hear you. What's the name of this dog?
This is Piggy.
Did you say Piggy?
Piggy, yeah.
And your name is?
Eli.
And it looks like, is this a service dog? Or?
No, he's just my dog.
Is he an emotional assistance?
I mean, he's my emotional assistant.
Yeah, well, that's a service animal.
I mean, do you have a therapist or a doctor that's said, called your dog an emotional assistant?
I don't have insurance. I don't really have a doctor.
That can be a problem. So how long have you guys been in Santa Cruz, you and the pooch?
We've been here since 2010.
And has your dog bitten anybody in the past?
No, he's like lunged at people before. He's not great in public. That's why I was in the alley. Because he's fine when I'm just walking with him, but if we stay in one place too long...
An officer approached you?
Yeah, he was walking down the alley, and he came up, and then he... At first, he was just walking by, and I was okay, but then he stopped, and, like, suddenly, and then Piggy lunged at him, and then he got, like, freaked out, so...
Oh, yeah, an animal thought that he was going to attempt something on you.
Yeah, I think just when he got up, the police officer got afraid, and then that kind of freaked the dog out, so he was, like, you know...
What was the name of the officer, you know?
I don't know.
Is the officer here presently, or did the prison?
Not anymore, no.
So we have three police officers and a ride-along observing, as well as a parked police station wagon.
So that means there's no one covering the west side.
Well, I mean, you know, this
there's
is certainly more important.
There's only two officers at most, and they take them off for things like this. So the gangbangers and the drug dealers are free to... Which is one of my issues.
What is your name, madam?
I'm Pat Colby.
Okay. And who are you, sir?
I'm Colin.
Hey, do you want to say who you are for free radio?
So my name's Ron.
Thanks, sir.
I didn't see.
This is an important fact.
And how long have you been here yourself?
Right now?
Yeah.
Maybe like 20, 25 minutes, something like that.
And are you prevented from leaving?
Yeah, I believe so. I'm not really sure. I mean, I asked the guy, the first guy, and me and my dog just
my
go.
My brother advocates for issues like this.
Okay.
John Colby, and he would definitely, he's helped advocate when people have gotten tickets or false things. He'll help you get a public defender.
Yeah.
So that, you know, he makes sure that you get all your rights, all your civil rights protected throughout the whole thing.
Of course, you'll have to reclaim your dog after a certain period of time if they actually do take him and pay them money, which means you may be in a bad position because...
Okay, Jessica, real quick. Yeah. So, I want to keep you informed. As if you guys mind just taking a tiny step
officer
backwards for us, please, just to give us our space bubble. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So, I have... The information, that phone number is good for you right now. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So what we're going to do is I'm just going to take a photo of you and take a photo of your dog, and then I'm going to give you my card. It has a case number on it, okay? And it sounds like they're just going to contact animal control so he can come out and, I guess, interview you is what it sounds like. Until then, it's probably a good idea to keep your dog, you know, inside until he comes and talks to you about the situation. Obviously, they're more versed in this than we are with animal issues. This is me. We're going to be that. So hold on to that. If questions come up, feel free to call me. And then we'll take a photo here of Piggy.
When's your turn? I do have a question for you, officer.
Thanks, Piggy.
Smile.
Piggy.
Look at the photo.
Piggy.
Hey, Piggy.
Oh, it reminds me of my Harley.
You got a dog?
No.
I had one like that.
No.
Not. And then
hey, it's another squad car. Look at that.
That way they know who the owner
is. This huge crime that's going on.
The officer is photographing both the dog and the dog owner here.
Let me just check one more thing with my sergeant, and then we'll let you go.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah, I just have a question.
I'm sorry. I'm busy right now. I'll be with you.
you hear that?
I think so, yeah.
I was pretty sure that
she... Well, Colin was the one that she warned. Did she say the dog bit somebody else?
That's what she told me.
Or snapped at somebody else.
I think that's what she said, yeah.
She said
bit. I mean, you're the one who's got it on tape, so...
So I want to
hear it. Right, somewhere. So what's your analysis of this, Pat?
Well, I just gave my analysis.
It isn't on tape, so you can say it again if you want.
Oh, my analysis is she was minding her own business. She's in an alley. She wasn't near anyone. So the officers approached and created an incident and are trying to claim a bite when there was no bite.
Well,
and I have to say that dog was so friendly. She didn't even flinch when I petted her nose. So.
Well, you may be a particularly... dog-friendly.
No, I know how to approach animals. And I, you know, sometimes the stance. Dogs are protective of their female owners. My dog would have done the same thing, saying, stay away from my female owner, because that's what they do. They defend their loved ones. And the dog must have felt that the loved one was in some kind of danger from this.
Well, none of us saw the incident except...
It was a male officer.
Again,
right?
Your name again is...
Yeah. Eli?
You are...
What do you mean?
What's your name again? I'm sorry.
Oh, Eli. Sorry.
Eli. Yeah. And she was calling you something else. I guess she prefers to call you by what? Your driver's license name. Have you had any other I was going to use the word harassing incidents, since it seemed like a lot of time and trouble for, you know, this situation, which seemed to be... Was this initiated by police contact in your view or not?
I think the police officer walking by kind of... I was sitting down. I looked up and it was a police officer, so I think I got a little bit nervous. And then I think that, like, then he... Yeah, and then the guy, like, stopped suddenly. Like, he was kind of walking by and he stopped suddenly, and then that's when Piggy was like...
Was he addressing himself to you when he stopped?
He had stopped and turned, yeah.
He wanted to... Did he ever indicate to you what his problem or what his interest was in you?
No. I mean, just that... I mean, at that point, like, you know, he was upset because he was saying my dog had bit him, so... There's that.
Did he say the dog had bit him, or did he say the dog had snapped at him?
He said the dog had bit him, but, I mean, then he said that, like, he said it didn't break the skin or whatever, but, yeah.
I see.
But there is apparently a disagreement that there was no bite. There was actually even... there's a difference between a bite and a snap. It can be different. But, again, I wasn't present, didn't witness any of it. It's just... let's hear some more.
Better go approaching the officers.
I'm sorry, I'm on a time constraint with a parking meter. So, I forgot the officer's name. She, in fact, told Robert and I when we approached that the dog bit someone. And as we're asking questions, we're finding out the dog made no contact.
The dog what?
Made no contact, so that claiming that it was a bite when it isn't is kind of misinformation.
I don't have time to talk to you right now. I'll help you,
Dick. And she's addressing herself now to Sergeant Christian Lamas, who was one of the officers standing with a CSO, Officer Barnett, off to the side. And I've encountered Sergeant Lamas mostly in the fairly distant past, some years ago. I may have seen him since, probably have. But I knew him years ago because of his notorious involvement with... breaking the arm, as I understand it from the accounts of the witnesses and from the accounts of the victim, Donna Dice, of a 61-year-old woman who lived in her vehicle out at the Lighthouse Field kind of seafront area, when there used to be a parking lot that folks who lived in vehicles spent a lot of time parking in. And he had her arrested and taken to... I don't know if she was taken to jail or to the hospital and cited and released. I don't remember at this point. But she eventually sued him. She was found guilty ultimately of littering, because that's what the DA plea bargained it down to. He wanted to get rid of the charge. They initially claimed she was resisting arrest, but there was no underlying charge. Something about smoking a joint or something. And this, what you're going to hear throughout is Lamas's refusal really to have any kind of dialogue with the witnesses present. I mean, there's no serious emergency here. There's no threat to anybody. He's just being rude to people there and refusing to talk to them. Now, we are critics. At least I'm a critic of the police department frequently, not always, but frequently. And so one can understand he may be in a somewhat defensive posture. Still, it's his responsibility, and he gets paid for it to deal with the public in a professional manner. You can judge of yourself how professional it is, and well, here's some more of this.
That's Christian Lamas, famous in the Donna Dice settlement. He's well known in Santa Cruz in some quarters.
I guess the police don't have time to get the actual facts.
And I have heard of Officer Barnett, too. Officer Barnett, how are you doing today? You know, politeness is important when you're dealing with the public.
Officer Barnett refused to respond to anything I was saying. And I suppose, you know, that's his right. Certainly as a citizen, you can ignore other people. As a police officer, it's, I would say, more professional to be polite and at least responsive in a superficial way. Barnett has been accused by numerous street vendors of going out of his way to deliberately harass them. This was true, for example, with the street jewelers David and Crystal, who you've heard accounts from if you listen to my show, and then also Kate, the yarn, well, she would knit yarn sweaters on the street. He is credited with driving these people away by giving them tickets for hundreds of dollars, claiming that they needed a business license to do what craftspeople and artists have traditionally done on Pacific Avenue for decades, admittedly, frequently with police interference. But anyway, that's his reputation, and his name has come up a lot in the last few weeks in the interviews I've had on Pacific Avenue. But you're not going to hear much from him or about him. Mainly the dialogue is between myself and Sergeant Christian Lamas.
CSO Barnett, but
not,
apparently
not.
Not
in Santa Cruz.
The story here, Mr. Kahn.
Hey, so did you ever get disciplined for breaking that woman's arm, Christian?
Did you ever get disciplined for making up
you
lies?
You didn't answer my question.
I didn't answer my
you
question.
Are a police officer. We
yeah.
pay you.
Yeah.
Were you disciplined?
You worked, you paid me.
Were you disciplined for breaking Donna Dice's arm?
On your business, my friend.
Ah, so there you are.
Don't wait, she tries
official
to
official answer.
Auditor.
Go report
either.
More lies to the community.
What, what lies would those be?
Claiming that I broke somebody's arm.
You didn't? You deny it?
Absolutely.
Fair enough. Well, I'll put your denial on record.
Have a great day.
And you too.
Oh, that's funny, because
it's
a criminal.
Don't stand behind me, please. Go somewhere else.
You're not telling us to leave a public scene, are you?
I'm just telling you not to stand behind me.
You turned your back on me, you know, so don't pull that kind of thing on me, officer. Please. That's not fair.
Don't pull it on me. Don't try me.
Hey.
Okay, step back.
Don't grab the bait.
What bait?
Hey, Colin, you better get going.
All right.
I took a step back, Sergeant Lamas. If you feel threatened by a tape recorder, I'm surprised. You know how to break people's arms, I mean, or to fracture their arms. Let's put it that way. Do you deny you fractured her arm? Do you deny you fractured her arm?
You're funny.
So he's refusing to say no. He doesn't deny it. Not funny a bit.
That's very funny.
Well, that's the problem.
Yep.
You can smile at other people's suffering instead of dealing with the issue as you should, I think.
Right.
I don't think it is right. And you're approaching me. You just approach me. Don't tell me to move back. Thank you.
So,
excuse me.
I explained to you about the
how's it
going? Control.
How
excuse
me.
You
can
you
move away. Thank you.
At your house.
So the officer is now positioned himself between myself and the dog.
Having a dog that
but he seems relaxed, and I'm glad he's not in an angry mood. In the meantime, the other officer, we have three police officers harassing a dog owner right here on Pacific Avenue. Come and take a look, folks. We have two squad cars and a laughing police officer is having a great time with the whole thing. This is the sergeant who some years ago fractured the arm of a 60-year-old homeless woman, Donna Dice, who settled out of court in a civil settlement with him. Am I mistaken on that, Sergeant?
You are mistaken.
Well, then correct me. I'd love to hear the correction.
It's baloney.
What's the truth of the matter, Sergeant? What's the truth of the matter?
You're wasting my time. That's the truth.
So you're not correcting me. You're essentially ignoring the issue.
Ignoring you.
We have three police officers harassing a dog owner. Here, one of them is an officer Barnett. Another is an officer whose name I don't know. And of course, there's Sergeant Lamas.
Have you been harassed by us? I feel like we've harassed you. Mr. Kahn for
Norse, actually.
Change that up. understandable.
You held her for half an hour, Sergeant. That isn't harassment. I don't know what is.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Smile on, but please try not to fracture other women's arms, particularly not elderly women. Have a good day. Good. Good. In the meantime, try to tell the truth rather than laughing when somebody tells it to you.
Okay.
Thank you.
And that was an incident that ended about 2:35.
And we actually have an incoming phone call, if the caller is still there. Are you still there, caller?
Yes, I am. I love that. That was great. You really gave it to them there, Robert. They must fucking hate you.
Well, I don't think Christian is one of my biggest fans. Do you remember the incident? Crow, do you remember the incident when Donna Dice had her arm broken?
Yes, I remember her walking around with her fucking broken arm and what happened. I couldn't believe the situation had what happened, when that you, they would do that to her.
You weren't present, though, when it happened, right?
I wasn't there at the scene, but... I was well aware of what was going on, and I, you know, it was over at the, what do you call it, Three Trees or something like that, over at my lighthouse.
Breaking news.
Over by the beach.
Uh-huh.
It happened over there, right?
Yeah, it happened up, kind of, sort of...
On East Cliff.
Yes, on West Cliff Drive.
Yeah.
Yeah, so but you're currently, are you currently in Watsonville, or have you...
Yeah, currently in Watsonville. It seems like they're putting the hammer down on people camping out in RVs because we're, quote-unquote, too high profile, so they'd probably rather see us sleeping in the bushes than having an RV and stuff, you know? So...
And so this is a change in what they've been doing in Watsonville?
Yeah, they seem to be cracking down because there seem to have been a lot more people showing up in RVs around the area, from what I could see, which is no big deal for me. This morning, me and Red went over to Starbucks because we had a meeting with some county people about her services, and an officer approached me and said that I couldn't camp in the parking lot of the Safeway at Starbucks parking lot. And I said I was here for a meeting. And he kept on going on, well, if you're here later on tonight, I'm going to cite you and give you a ticket. You know, and I was like, well, I don't plan on camping here. I was like, well, I know that you camp over by the 7-Eleven. I know you camp over by the hospital. And I know you camp there and camp there. And there's no camping in Santa Cruz. I mean, Watsonville. So go outside the city limits and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, they still have the same law for the county rules, you know. And,
different but similar.
You know, he said, well, that's the sheriff's problem.
What's the...
You know,
what's,
they're just plenty
Crow, what's the name of this officer, do you know?
You know, I had his fucking name written down on a piece of paper because he put, you know, his, gave me a 72 hours in a little tiny, flyer on my windshield said I had 72 hours to leave. I should have kept it. I can't find it now. I should have actually asked for his card when he said that, you know,
mm-hmm.
All that shit this morning.
Have you been in contact with other people in vehicles, or are you and Red pretty much keep to yourselves?
Yeah, I've been in contact, with other people in vehicles, and it seems like a lot of the people that are in RVs have been getting the same message from cops and or have been given citations.
Huh.
What kind of citations, I do not know.
And I take it that there's no bid for folks to get together and, you know, challenge this or start making it a public issue?
Sure not, but if I get a ticket, because I told him, he told me about all this stuff, and I said, okay, I know, you give me a citation, blah, 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 okay, you know, see you later, you know, and it's just like, if gives a citation, I gotta take fucking courtroom D10 down the basement, you know, which will mean fucking jack shit. But found guilty.
Well, they can pull your driver's license or start, not to mention your credit rating and also. I don't know
your driver's license unless it's a motor vehicle citation.
Oh, really?
In the studio with me is a legal eagle. Are you to be named or are you to be remain anonymous? An anonymous legal eagle. Say something, see if we got you on the right mic there.
So, hello?
Yes, you're on the right
mic.
So, bro, you've gotten plenty of tickets in town for sleeping here in Santa Cruz, right?
Yeah.
And you've never been able to not register your vehicle or get your license because they have to be moving violations?
No, they haven't done anything towards the registration of a vehicle. And because it's not a motor vehicle citation, they can't suspend your license. It has to be, the ticket has to be a motor vehicle citation.
That's like useful information.
That's good news.
Yeah.
That's why they do it, because it doesn't do any good to stop someone who's poor anyways, you know?
Right?
In Santa Cruz, what they do is they have a law that if you get three infractions, they can turn that into a misdemeanor. And they also have if you get three infractions, all subsequent infractions can become misdemeanors. But I don't think that's necessarily the case in Watsonville, because it's a different jurisdiction. But, you know,
I'm not sure.
And also, there is also the downside in Watsonville. That in Santa Cruz, if you get on the waiting list of the Homeless Lack of Services Center or the River Street Mini Shelter, they're supposed to automatically dismiss citations, but not in Watsonville, because that's another... I don't think they changed the law there. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
well,
I just wanted to interject.
That's fine with me. I will still fight such an unlawful and ungodly citation, no matter what fucking town I'm in. You know what I mean?
They don't like people that fight back either. You know?
So how do you intend to fight back? Or are you going to fight back by ignoring it?
My strategy has been, especially with the Santa Cruz court system, is if found guilty, they tell me that I have so many days to pay the fine. So it goes into collections, and I get the piece of paper in the mail that says I'm in violation of the Superior Court. Go to collections, and then the collections try to get money out of me, and I just go say, you're going to try to get money out of me? Fuck you, and hang up the phone.
Well, that's one approach.
It's the poverty defense.
I'm not afraid. I do this because I'm not afraid, and I put my shit out on the fucking line.
Do others do this?
Crow,
have you noticed that others do something similar, or are you unique in doing this in the Watsonville scene?
Well, it's not just Watsonville. I think I'm unique even in Santa Cruz, because everybody's fucking scared about either their fucking, interest. I got a cold, the flu. I'm sorry.
Your credit rating?
I'm pretty, out of it right now. I know. A credit. That's it. Everybody's afraid of their fucking credit. And I have zero. I don't give a fuck about my credit, because I really don't give a shit about the whole fucking system.
In Santa Cruz, we have. Yes. In Santa Cruz, we have the rise of vigilante neighborhood groups like Take Over Santa Cruz, which calls itself Take Back Santa Cruz, and Santa Cruz NIMBY Neighbors, which calls itself Santa Cruz Neighbors. And, of course, there's the original group, the Santa Cruz Police Department, which calls itself the Santa Cruz Police Department, which actually is spending a lot of time, sometimes actually jumping up and down on vehicles, demanding people leave the area at 4 in the morning. That's a favorite of Lieutenant Habey, Joe Habey, at least it was, as you know. So I'm wondering, is there a similar vigilante process going on in Watsonville, or is there a different attitude?
No, just this one particular cop, I guess, has been taken it upon himself, or the department has given the righteous duty to this officer to go around and harass people who living in RVs and stuff,
There is one officer in Watsonville who's doing the Habey number.
No, they don't come around. That's one thing that they've never done is come around fucking early in the morning. You know, they're more polite about it here.
Uh-huh.
Which is a joke in itself.
Everybody's getting sick. I noticed that.
Yeah. I'm really close to hospital, so if I die, you know, I won't be too far from
the flu can kill you. At least a couple people have died.
Yeah, swine flu has been killing people.
And, you know, cold weather and the flu and you know.
At least I won't have to worry about a fucking camping ticket.
That's true. That's the upside. Any other reports, Crow? I know I always want to give you a tip of the hat because in 2007 on the Homies for the Homeless protest, you were the public restroom, your van.
I was the restroom.
As Ed Fry was provided the porta potty in 2010 for the protest. So are you ready to bring that mobile restroom back to Santa Cruz to open up your pooper place?
I think that was a one-time shot right there and then. But I would like to be involved with more stuff. I've been dealing with a lot of medical issues with Red still. She would like to say hi to you. Hold on.
Hey, Red.
Yeah, Red, yeah.
Hi, Robert.
Hey,
how
Red. How you doing?
Some medical issues popped up, but still fighting like a trooper. There's hard to be constant stuff going on here.
Sober for 2.5 months.
Yeah, we quit drinking. We've been sober for 2.5 months.
Hey, congratulations. Good work. I know you've been fighting cancer now for, 3 years?
Yeah, it's been going on 4 now.
4 years. Now, are you taking any treatments like radiation or chemotherapy or a slice off a limb or whatever they're doing?
After surgery, I did chemo, and that was really great. And I red blind on that. I was allergic to it. And then the blue fluid dripping down your arm for 4 hours. You know, and you just sit there and it Crow sat there with me a couple times. Yeah, I stuck my dog in with me once. But then I did the radiation, and they end up burning your whole side. It's the pinpoint place where you had surgery, to get the lumps out on my breast. And then now I'm doing 5 years of steroids.
Wow. Yummy.
Steroids, killing my estrogen. Because ladies, do not be afraid of how you got cancer in your breast. I got it from having too much estrogen.
Oh wow! I think I heard that estrogen, estrogen laced products can be dangerous, is what I heard years ago. Estrogen laced products, treatments and different medications. Have you learned Spanish in your years in Watsonville? I hear there's a large Spanish speaking population there.
Just a little bit, common courtesies and stuff like that, and all the bad words, of course. I know, some of it from working in the office for a while, for the One Avenue Women's Center. I did a volunteer work there for 6 years.
So what are you going to do, Red? What are you going to do? Are you and Crow planning to change your modus operandi, your way of dealing with things because of the warnings by cops? You're just sort of reporting, that's what's going on, more of the same old horseshit, we deal with it the way we deal with it.
The same old horseshit. I was actually thinking of putting a protest up because I am 100% American. I have lived with a disability, and also I'm a taxpayer, and I employ a caregiver who pays taxes too. Also, let's see, what else is my agenda? I have cancer, and just because I reside in a motorhome, we were told to leave town tonight, park outside town in the county, and that's like way out in the boonies, that's scared out there, it's dark, there's nothing. We park close to the hospital, we park where the truckers park, so we blend in. And we're not, obtrusive looking. You can't really notice us where we go. And we do all highway cleanups and, where we park, we clean up that area and stuff like that and maintain it. Because we can't stand what a lot of Americans, name yourself one, that are doing too much littering. And it's killing our natures. And all our wildlife reservoirs and stuff. Stuff gets blown for miles by the wind and currents and everything, and pulling up trucks that pick them up. They're already being thrown out of windows. Yeah, we've done a lot of that. So
Red, I'm gonna wind this up because I've got a bunch of interviews that I've taped that I want to roll into, plus an unexpected visitor here who's got all kinds of exciting breaking news, perhaps. Visitor, do you have exciting breaking news?
I just came from the protest at the clock tower.
Oh, right. There was, of course, the Sin Baras protest against the... Brown's new shovel more money at the jails proposal that's coming down the pike. Mm-hmm. Anything else you guys want to say that you before we leave you in Watsonville?
No, it's just like we're still here and we're not leaving. You know, it should be against the law what we're trying to do. And we're trying to bring awareness to the community. You know, there's all these hidden people and stuff like that that are doing an atmosphere to the place. Anyways, I need to go because I just saw the doctor and I don't feel good.
Hey, get some rest, kiddo. And thank
all
you
right.
And thank Gro for calling in, man.
Sure.
All
guys,
right.
Have a good night.
Yeah, you
bye.
Too. Bye-bye. It was Crow and Red in Watsonville.
What is this? They used to live here, right?
Yeah, they did.
So Watsonville's become a magnet now for the homeless?
It's a magnet, clearly. They're wonderful social services, friendly police officers, and nice Safeway parking lots or something. You're tuned to Free Radio for the time being, likely to go under soon, but still kind of...
Well,
splashing around.
Again.
We are broadcasting
there,
again for until the...
maybe I'll get my show back.
And maybe you, probably the most radical member of the Free Radio Collective, will get your show back.
Well,
if you're ever
to the worst quality show on Free Radio.
I don't know if that's true. I kind of like what I've heard of your show, though I rarely listen to it. I think the quality of the show.
Some of the things they say, yes, I'm more radical than other people.
Well, I think you cover subjects that are important. And, of course, your show was part of the Tangerine Dream Team on Tuesdays. Now, I guess, moved to another channel.
She's at like 3 to 5 now on Tuesdays. And there's all kinds of openings for shows now because a lot of people lost their shows. They haven't been paying their dues.
That's correct.
They've been locked out of the studio.
Indeed. This combination changes sort of like overnight, man. Indeed. And I don't intend to tell you because you're obviously one of those evil, non-due paying members.
Cole and R. Duck, we're talking about doing a benefit here at...
there is a benefit coming up
at the Tannery
at the Tannery Art Cafe, which I've not been to yet. Have you been to the Tannery Art Cafe yet?
Yeah, I don't eat anywhere. But
you've wandered on
outside,
it.
Yes.
Now, I know that Coral, who lives at the Tannery area...
We don't know where she lives, really.
Who may or may not live at the Tannery area, but I've heard rumors that she lives there, has mentioned that there was some hostility developed between Tannery residents and homeless folks who have no place to live, so live on the riverbanks.
That's what I've heard from another homeless person, too. There's an element there that, you know, is just like Take Back Santa Cruz. And these are people that are being subsidized, by the way, in order to live at the Tannery.
So
and yet, when, you know, they've got their subsidy, but they had someone poorer than them.
You kick the person underneath. It's kind of a sad deal. It reminds me.
On the other hand, there is a lot of theft. I mean, there's a lot of junkies in that area. Heroin sold in the Poconip, so they're under constant attack.
And, of course, we don't have any injection, inhalation centers, or decriminalization of hard drugs. So instead we have a huge
black market. If that stuff was legal, you wouldn't have no
market.
They would just sit in the corner and
but,
not out.
It's ironic. You know, some of the Take Back Santa Cruz people, and some of the people who even... separate themselves from Take Back Santa Cruz, like T.J. Magallanes, who started the Clean Team website and then told it was taken over by Take Back Santa Cruz, claim they are, and I believe sincerely want to see an end to the drug war and would favor that, but aren't really proposing specific things locally that could be done. I mean, we have to remember that Santa Cruz, along with San Francisco, was a pioneer in decriminalizing marijuana medically in the early 90s. We passed the resolution at the Board of Supervisors, got them to do it. Of course, San Francisco had Dennis Perone and underground medical marijuana. Not underground. He was quite overt in having a place where you could go and get medical marijuana. He was repeatedly busted
Valerie
for
Corral,
it.
Valerie Corral, you know, spearheaded it for
and,
the whole
and Valerie Corral, when
and
she,
husband, Mike.
For a while, spearheaded it until she got her own little piece of the rock, and then she continued to do her own little thing, ignoring everybody else and the majority of people in the community who continue to have needs. Valerie, bad girl. So, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. As I mentioned before, just a moment ago, we are in really serious both financial shape and also transmitter shape. We only have very temporarily a transmitter site, the place where
we don't know when it's going to disappear.
It's about to be foreclosed.
Yeah.
Or it already has been. Or it's hard to say what
it's
the story
hard to
is.
Say.
And so we need a place. I keep mentioning it, but we don't seem to have the skills or the vision or the connections to go there. I know that this is unlike the past when Free Radio's had problems, and I've been with Free Radio since 1995, mm-hmm. mostly just as a broadcaster, you know, mm-hmm. and a supporter, not as a person who actually does technical work or scouts yeah. out sites. There were times when had our equipment confiscated. There were times when we had to move because the landlords were threatened by the FCC. But we quickly found other places, generally. I mean, mm-hmm. I think there were one or two times we had to be, you know, move mm-hmm. around mobily on a, you know, yeah, we didn't find a place for a while. But this is the longest period of time, I think, we've ever been without a real place to go.
A site, you mean, for the antenna?
For the and transfer office. And the result of that, and I talked to Sandino, who's an activist in the community and a big supporter of Free Radio in his own right.
He was at the protest, by the way.
And a guy about to lose his show as well.
I teased him about that, but no, he's paid.
And he pointed out he's paid. Apparently.
Some of it, most of it, half of it.
So. Yeah. But
enough to keep his show.
But we do seem to be losing huge numbers of people.
Yes.
And part of that is because people have gotten the impression we aren't on the air anymore, and so nobody listens because they don't think there's anything to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's a self-fulfilling cycle.
It's a difficult situation. I mean, Sandino suggested we put up flyers and posters and patches and things of that sort around town, stickers that indicate Free Radio, we're back, don't forget, help, help. And I've often also wondered, you know, has radio generally, Free Radio,
yeah.
kind of come and gone? I mean, are we in a situation
where... Yeah,
I mean, are we in a situation now where you do your iPodding?
YouTube, you know.
You know, YouTube.
I mean,
YouTube,
I get all my songs off YouTube.
You know, and so, is there a point to doing this? I mean, I do it because I don't even know if I do these shows.
Well, you get a decent number of listeners.
Well, yeah,
so
but I mean...
there's a reason for you to do your show. But other people, you know, they look on the stream... they see how few listeners they're getting, and they know they're not broadcasting. Then why am I spending money every week? You know.
Yeah, yeah. No, I hear you. Mm-hmm. Perhaps this is a listener calling in, even as we speak. A rare phone call. Yeah, maybe a large donor.
There we go.
Hey there, listener. How you doing?
I'm doing fairly good. It's good to listen to your show, Uncle Robert.
This is David.
Yes, David Minton Silva, sir.
Hi, David.
I have a little kind of almost esoteric sounding point to make, but I really think it's a good principle that all of us activists and organizers should really be thinking about right now. Let's face it, you know, a lot of things that should have been better by now aren't better.
There's
a lot of people who get a lot of work, and I'm saying don't give up, folks. Every little time we challenge the system for fucking over us or fucking over one of our friends or fucking over some poor, helpless human being, We're making a revolutionary move because we're in a fascist, Madison Avenue style, mm-hmm. to fit America fascism, albeit, but you know, it meets the advertising agency standards, but it's still fascism, and we have to rise up, we have to fight back, and know that we're all in this together, and hey, this is revolution. And you know, I threw around the word maybe a little too much, but it is. So keep the faith, everybody. Know that I love you, Robert. You're doing a great job.
And, David, I want you to work on that vets report, okay? Because I know you're concerned about the vets, and you're one yourself.
Yes, I didn't make it to the vet meeting I wanted to go to. I went to the wrong one this week, but I will definitely go to the right one next week.
Okay.
It's a deal, Uncle Robert. I'll be your veterans is a hot area always, and right now there's a lot of things happening, so I do need to report to you. I will.
Much thanks, man.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. You know, David, I kind of get exasperated with him because he's so enthusiastic. He always wants to do stuff, and then
he's very optimistic.
He doesn't do it often because he has a lot of disabilities. And so, you know, it's something that I kind of say, oh, you know, you say that. But the fact is, his enthusiasm, mm-hmm. his positive attitude, mm-hmm. is itself a resource. It's something that... you know, his brightness. And I'm thanking you for this publicly, David, for you doing this, in spite of the fact that I'm always shutting you up at Huff meetings and saying, what the fuck, you know, don't give us another rhyme. We're going to do this when you don't do it. You know,
you say that to a lot of people at Huff meetings.
Well, right? I try to be accurate.
You try and guilt people into doing
things. Well, not so much guilt. I mean, if someone has not done something and then they're proposing for the 43rd time they're going to do something and they don't do it, I'm wondering what the story is. But I thank you for, you know, the optimism you have, and I thank you for keeping, you know, at least one or two callers. You're a regular caller. Part of me thinks, oh, how pathetic this show is with this. You know.
At least
but,
you get callers,
but another
Robert.
Part of me says, thank you. And so I want to thank you for that.
A lot of us don't get callers.
So Mr.
Robert.
F, and I'll call you that because I know that you don't want your real name exposed.
Titles,
to the. I think, well, Citizen F, perhaps.
Buckhead.
Yeah, well, I don't want to say that. Have you got, I know that you're responsible at the collective for actually doing what? Yeah, no, I remember. You got me, of course, involved as well.
Oh, I was responsible. I'm yes. guilty.
Yeah,
that I understand.
Well, you should take this responsibility, but not the blame.
Responsible?
Yes.
About, I can see, but not responsible.
You were responsible for actually getting, you know, the station to state that they discourage sleeping in the studio, for example, but they don't ban it. And you might say, well, what's the radio station for sleeping? Doesn't it get problems with the landlord? But in fact, it doesn't really create problems here if it's done in a reasonable way, and
nothing wrong with sleeping. Come on,
and sleeping, in fact, is an issue in Santa Cruz for homeless people.
It's a huge issue because it's something they can point out to separate somebody that's just lying down for someone who's homeless. You know, a tourist can lie down, but if you're actually sleeping as a homeless person, now you're committing a crime.
Big time.
You know, theoretically, laying on a blanket or a towel at the beach is a violation of 647E,
mm-hmm.
a six-month prison term. As we know, Gary got, you know, four of those for sleeping on three nights.
Lodging, of course, is that's a long issue, which mm-hmm. An important issue, and that one that is used against political activists who...
Because they claim you can lodge at any time of day.
Like Gary Johnson tried to challenge that. Ground Zero Gary, as I like to call him, which I'm sure he doesn't much like.
He's doing well, by the way.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I'm glad you're in touch with him. Mm-hmm. And indeed, he continues. If you're interested in the adventures of Ground Zero Gary, he has a website. I think it's peacecamp2010insider.blogspot.com if you want to. I don't know how current it is, but you can also find some of his writing on Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org.
Not anymore.
Oh, he doesn't come on there anymore?
Not anymore.
Oh, okay. Because I know he was there.
He was a G.
A week or two. He was G.
No, more
there.
Than a week.
Was it more longer ago?
Yeah.
In any case, I mean, that's one of the places where I write stuff. And I've also...
And sometimes me.
And,
well, I'm not getting censored by that media.
We have, is this another phone call? I can't believe
all
this.
Kinds of
maybe,
calls.
You know, maybe the people are trying to say you should be coming back on the air or free. They want to hear more of you. All right. Hey there, caller. Welcome to Free Radio.
Hello, Robert. It's John Chilking.
Dangerous John from San Jose.
Yeah, I'm recording your show right now. So.
Oh, excellent. So if we start getting screwed up on the stream here, you can... save the show. Thank you very much. I think actually our recording in the studio is also working, but I'm really glad that somebody's backing it up. Thank you.
Yeah.
So, anything? What's happening?
I just wanted to give a couple updates. On my website, peacemovies.com, I have some updates relating to Andy Lopez and Kelly Thomas. Andy Lopez was a 13-year-old who was shot dead by Sonoma County Sheriff's deputy on October 22nd. Last year, and apparently the sheriffs have started really cracking down on the protesters. They are giving them gang enhancements now whenever they stop them on the street, apparently.
Huh. And where are you getting this information from?
From KPFA.org.
Oh, dear. Well, yeah, that's good.
Look at the
KPFA radical
points.
Everywhere but in Berkeley. That's the... go ahead.
Yeah. Anyway, the Flashpoint show for the last couple of days, yesterday and the day before, was talking about Andy Lopez on there. So we look for Flashpoint on KPFA.org, the archive. You can find the information.
Okay, Andy Lopez on the KPFA archive.
Yeah.
Or you can probably go directly to, you know, maybe there's probably a website that the Andy Lopez supporters have already directly put up that might be even more
useful
than KPFA.
See if I can figure out what it was.
Again, the internet rather than the radio is sort of the new approach to things. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. It's listed on my website also, peacemovies.com. I can't remember the name of it. Exactly.
Peacemovies.com is your website, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's listed on the peacemovies.com.
You know, I know in the past, few phone calls and on your emails, these are emails I brought to the HUF meeting, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with, that mention your own inquiries into bus company discrimination against homeless people who have bought tickets and are trying to sleep on the bus as a sort of a, what, the Route 22 hotel or Hotel 22 approach?
Hotel 22, yeah. I'm not aware of anyone kicking them off the bus for sleeping, but there was an issue
they refused
I talked about on Sunday where...
They refused reentry, right?
What was that?
She was refused reentry to the bus because she had slept on the way down. Wasn't that what you were telling me, or that was your report?
Well, not necessarily slept, but just...
Had her bags with her.
And she just got off the bus and waited for the next bus route to start. And it was apparently the same driver, so the driver said, sorry, you can't board because you're making a round trip.
And you found out from the supervisors that was inappropriate and against the policy of the company, what the driver did, right?
Right.
Sounds like it.
Of course, you didn't make contact with the woman to find out her name and get her information to see if she actually was properly...
No, started. I was on the bus leaving.
Yeah. Well, you should have stopped the bus, seized the driver by the throat, and
now,
said...
No, Robert, these are volunteer people doing stuff
hey,
on their own.
Hey, I don't
want
to hear this shit
minions.
From you. I want to see some action here, particularly if I don't have to take any risk
That's
involved,
right.
which is much, much, much nicer. I can report on it, though. I'll report on it for you.
Yeah.
Hey, anything else, John? You mentioned this, we have a situation where, well, we don't have it. Fullerton, as you know, the courts down there acquitted the four cops who murdered this homeless...
Kelly Thomas.
Kelly Thomas. I put out two articles about on the Huff website. And I tried to reference some of the times where the Santa Cruz police have shot dead or killed people in Santa Cruz. It hasn't happened recently, but it has happened, and there haven't been any palpable or visible disciplinary consequences. So
there never is.
And I'm in the boat with Kelly Thomas because I have schizophrenia too, but I'm fine on medication.
You could send a police officer to your home to take care of that whole problem and save the government some money, John. You know,
yeah, right.
Schizophrenic dog that you are. You know, so. Well, I really appreciated your persistence in following up on this bus situation. I was kind of hoping someone in Santa Cruz would do the same. And indeed, yesterday, one of the things I did do, as well as get into this interaction with Sergeant Christian Lamas, because it was kind of by the by as I was leaving the metro. I originally went to the metro bus station to check on the case of Laura Boyd, who I believe John Colby will be calling in about on Sunday. He's a disabled person advocate who's been doing a lot of what he calls guerrilla advocacy, where guerrilla means kind of guerrilla rather than, you know, bang, bang, kind of off in the shadows guerrilla. He believes in pitting bigger government agencies against smaller government agencies.
Oh, yes, me too.
In order to actually...
Divide and conquer. It's the same thing they use against us.
Yeah, and so he's going to talk about this case of a disabled woman who, by her account, at the Metro, they took her money for a Metro bus pass. They refused to give it to her, and they called the security guards. They told her to leave. She finally said, I'm calling. She didn't know what to do, called up Colby. He said, call the police. And the minute she announced she was calling police, the security guards scattered like cockroaches when the lights get turned on. And although I don't know why they would, the police are often the pals to the security guards. And we got a different story entirely from the supervisor who we talked to yesterday, who claimed that, you know, well, she wasn't there when it happened, but she said that it's just that the woman began making a big fuss because they had to check something, and other people in line wanted to be served, and she insisted on stopping the line, and so she was creating a disruption. She didn't get into whether they were telling her to leave the station, which apparently was the issue. And that was the issue for me with a metro station 4 or 5 years ago, when I was told after telling a security guard that... You know, I actually didn't tell the security guard anything. I told a couple of people the security guard was harassing. You don't have to talk to the security guard. You have a right to be there. And then I wanted to know actually what the security guard's name was, at which point he ordered me to leave. And I said, no, it's a public place. But no, it's not. It's a private business, even though taxpayer money goes to pay the Metro, according to Judge Ariadne Simons, who was the judge who found against
me. Is she being moved to family law?
I do not know.
This
I do not know.
Scary with
John, anything else before, and since we're kind of, you know, keeping you on the line?
I think we got it covered, yeah.
Okay, well, good luck with peacemovies.com and with your own advocacy for people who are you know, who can use your skills as you, you know, essentially raise issues, I think, that are important to raise, like you were doing with the bus situation.
Right. Hey, talk to you later.
Hey, take care, man. So call-in number here is 831-427-3772. I am going to play some interviews from the Red Church. That's Calvary Episcopal Church, where every Monday there's a meal. First there's coffee and a sermon, and sometimes guest speakers, and occasionally me going on about, you know, latest city council crap that comes up on the Tuesday that follows, usually, every other Tuesday. And there's a lot of people gathering there, and I usually go around and say, you know, what's cooking, and get interviews. So I'm going to play some of that. Before I do, Mr. F, what, anything, any updates that, you know, anything you want to, you haven't been on the air for a while.
I haven't been in the town much either.
No?
The protest, the Smash the Jails protest.
Well, let's talk about that. I know there was a protest at 4:30 at the town clock. Sin Baras Tash came to the Free Radio meeting, the Huff meeting, and mentioned it, and I had some flyers. I guess we were distributing them yesterday at the farmer's market. The specific issue, and I should probably look it up.
Expansion of the jails.
There's an immediate decision coming up as to how money that has already been appropriated, whether the Santa Cruz Board of Supervisors will accept that money for, I think the sheriff here is saying, oh, we're not going to expand the jails, we're just going to use it for other wonderful programs. But the Sin Baras people are rather skeptical about that. And Brown is also pushing for a second year of appropriations around that. Is that accurate as far as you know?
I have no idea on the details.
Yeah, I think what I'll ask is I'll ask Tash or someone else from Sin Baras to give more of a report when we actually, you know, can do that in more temperate, you know, and we'll have to scramble to put it out. How big was the protest today at the clock?
Usual, you know, 30 to 50 people.
And did they get a permit to assemble at the town clock under the new permit rules? Well, that you have to have a permit to be more than 50 people?
For their amplified sound device.
They did or didn't?
I don't think they did.
I
have no idea.
So we have two examples of illegality, and we have a man here who's going to blow the whistle on them prepared to testify against them in court.
No, I'm too blind to testify.
yes. Well, you are vision impaired, but your other vision...
We know what happens when I testify, no matter how I make it, you know, the clear truth that we're innocent, the judge will jury pick the fucking, or the commissioner will jury pick what I say for anything that's derogatory.
Really? You think so?
You have it in your trial.
Oh, you mean in the downtown singing trial in front of the bookshop Coonerty. Yeah, that was...
She somehow got that we had a conspiracy.
Yeah, there was a conspiracy, yes.
And we wanted to be loud enough to be heard from the book. She came up with it all on her own to be heard inside the bookshop.
That was Commissioner Basket Case, who really has some rather interesting responses to the longest infraction trial in Santa Cruz history that I've ever heard of.
That's because you just won your appeal with the Ninth Circuit or something.
Something like that.
They're all scared of you at that point.
Right. And speaking of which, by the way, for those of you who are trying to follow the case of the mock Nazi salute, or what I call the City Council repression case, where I was shut down after I made a silent, don't act like a bunch of fascists, mock Nazi salute. And then we sued the two mayors for false arrest, and we lost the lawsuit. The jury found against us, and when we appealed that to the judge supported the jury. Now the two attorneys are appealing that to a higher court, which I think is a highly unlikely appeal, apparently.
Well, maybe you've already got the support way at the top of the Ninth Circuit. You just have to get it up there.
Well, we don't have the support, not for the judge, not for this trial. All we had support for was the right to have a jury trial. That's all we got. And plus, they did find, they reaffirmed their decision that, and I've repeated this, and actually I want to mention this. This is something actually that is a bit of news. They repeated that you can't arrest someone for disrupting a meeting, or you can arrest them, but you can't convict them for disrupting a meeting unless they actually disrupt the meeting. You can't, if they break a rule, that's not disrupting a meeting.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, you're not supposed to stand here, you're not supposed to stand there, unless it's disruptive. Is my understanding.
But then the jury, well, it seemed up to... He rolled his eyes. It was disruptive.
Well, yeah, juries place a lot of...
They just do what they're told.
A lot of stock in... Yeah. I think they have a sort of a conditioned sense you have to follow authority or
exactly.
else you are not behaving in a ruptive and you're being disruptive, if you want to put it that way. Mm-hmm. But the Ninth Circuit Court some years ago, maybe it was even a higher court, found that you couldn't arrest someone for, you know, simply violating a rule. So I made that, And they reaffirmed that in my case, which said, so, I mean, it was never a case of me facing a criminal charge. I was never charged with disrupting a city council meeting.
Your freedom was taken away, though. You were
But I was
overnight.
Falsely arrested for it by the police. The DA refused to file charges, and the attorneys thought it was a slam dunk case. They wanted to pursue it. I was reminded by activist Becky Johnson, who's been closely involved in the case, that I fought taking the case to court because I felt these attorneys needed to be working on the sleeping ban or something that was a little more relevant.
But they thought it was an easy case.
They thought it was an easy case. So they've been struggling with
it
now.
What, 9 years later?
12 years later. It was in 2002 in March that the case actually happened at City Council. And again, for those who don't know, it's the council tried to exclude... They shut down a woman who came up to speak at the mic, even though it was her time to speak, and they had previously evicted another person trying to speak. And when they silenced her, I raised my left arm in a 2-second mock Nazi salute to them, indicating don't act like fascists. Didn't say anything. Mm-hmm. It was very brief. But they then used that as a pretext to demand I leave, stop the meeting, have me arrested, handcuffed, taken to jail. And so it was a false arrest because, of course, the DA, I imagine, looked at it and said, this isn't going to get no jury. Even in Santa Cruz, the jury won't buy this shit. So we sued them, and a civil jury in San Jose did not find that the mayor overstepped his prerogatives and did not find it was a violation of my
rights.
They're
ruling on the law when they do that. You know, it's not...
Well, they're ruling in the case of these two individuals whether they, in fact, committed torts against me, committed injuries against me. And so we'll see what happens with that. As I said, I don't think there's much hope, but I do think that this ruling that happened before and was reaffirmed when I got the right to a jury trial, which is that disruptive behavior is disruptive behavior. It's not symbolically disruptive behavior. It's not potentially disruptive behavior. It's not breaking a rule that might be interpreted as disruptive.
You have to make the meeting harder to conduct.
You have to stop the meeting in some way that really interferes with the meeting.
And yours didn't do that.
And mine didn't. And there are many. And the point is, for people in Santa Cruz, mayors will often give directions to people in the audience to try to shut them down and claim, sort of with the implied threat that they're going to be excluded from the meeting or arrested if they don't leave, which is a false threat, or it's an empty threat.
It's abuse of power.
And it's an abuse of power, but it's also an empty threat. I mean, and then my suggestion is people...
Well, no, they didn't get you out.
Well, I mean, I'm saying I think that they might think again before doing with the next person.
Yeah, exactly.
And so what happened at the last city council meeting, which was Tuesday, the first council meeting of the year, I'd been told by now Mayor Lynn Robinson, whom I'm calling Rattlesnake Robinson, though... I say that mainly because of her record on statements on homeless issues and votes on civil liberties issues in the last six years, I guess it is. But she apparently told the city clerk that I was not to be allowed to place my little audio recorder, my tape recorder actually, on the podium or near the podium, which I've been doing for 25 years at city council meetings.
Grandfathered in. It's a right now.
Well, it certainly is a traditional practice I've been using. Yeah. And nobody, you know, I guess I one person apparently complained about it in the last year, is what I was finally told by City Clerk Bren Lair. She's our city clerk. She, anyway, came up to the meeting in December and told me, you will not be allowed to place your tape recorder there. Mayor Robinson has told me so. And I said, oh, really? Okay. So I sent emails to Robinson and to Bren saying, look, if you want to give me some explanation for this, it's a rule. It's a decorum rule. And it was a rule put in by council member, then Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice, who was retaliating for homeless actions that over the winter of 2000-2001 tried to... It encouraged homeless people to come in what's called the coffee clatch, to come and... have coffee, have donuts right outside the mayor's office, and then go into the city council members and mayor's offices during the business hours, not disrupting business, asking them to end the sleeping ban and or open up campgrounds or shelters in the winter, because there's a controversy.
This is a retaliation against this direct action?
Because what they did was, and to retaliate at the time, was they took us to court and enjoined us from going to any city council offices or city council meetings, claiming we were harassing the staff.
Wait, they took you to court on this?
Yes. Yes,
and
this was paid for
win?
By the... No, they lost, but they lost 6 months later. And
in the meantime, you...
I was excluded initially from city council.
You can sue over that, too.
Well, if we had had you on our team, or one of your many attorneys, we would have done that, for sure.
Destroying the property to occupy was a slam dunk win, too, but nobody pursued that.
Well,
we just don't have the legal talent in this town.
Well, or, you know, again,
or
it's always...
will.
It's interesting. I mean, you know, we can talk about the law, and I'm glad that people are concerned about using whatever tools they can to get some basic rights restored and rights restored. But what happened then was then Mayor Fitzmaurice set down this whole set of decorum rules, and one of them was unattended recording devices will not be allowed in the city chambers. He also said you will not be allowed to record people, city employees, when you're talking to them. Which is ridiculous, because there's no expectation of privacy. It's a public discussion with
them. They all do that now. I mean, when I go to motor vehicles, they don't like me to record their...
Well, they may not like it, but they're forced to do it, is, I think...
Well, they refuse to talk to you.
Yeah, they'll walk away. That's what's happened at the police department when they've done that. So, but now with...
There is no expectation of privacy when you're with someone else, though, so always have two people with you when you're cop-watching.
Well, that's a good point, but also, yeah, and so anyway, this... The longer of it, because this is going on, is, and I'm saying that there's more protection because of this rule, that breaking a rule, the Supreme Court, I think it was a Ninth Circuit decision.
You can't be jailed for breaking a rule.
You can't be jailed. You can't be, disrupting a meeting is not the same thing as breaking a rule.
Mm-hmm.
This unattended tape recording rule that suddenly Lynn Robinson's attempted to resurrect and use against me, and I told her, look,
So what's the gist of it? Are you still leaving your tape recording?
Oh, yeah. Well, what happened was I prepared with some anxiety at the Tuesday meeting. I brought three tape recorders and signs and a chair, because if she means you're not supposed to leave your tape recorder unattended, I'm going to sit next to my tape recorder with a sign that says, don't I look stupid? You know, okay, we'll talk to Lynn about it. You know.
Exactly. Every rule has a way to get around it without actually breaking it that's even more embarrassing to him. And that's our creative...
Right, but
I
also thought, you know, I might well get arrested, and maybe it's worth getting arrested because this is a bunch of crap.
Yeah.
But what happened was, I also tried to give them every opportunity to act reasonably.
Right.
I emailed them three times. Yeah. I sent out all the stuff out to the media.
Exhaust your administrative.
And I don't think I sent it to you. I should send it to you so you could take a look at it yourself, because I know that you have a particular interest in these legal issues.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And eventually, finally, at Becky Johnson's suggestion, I sent an email to Lynn right before the meeting. Mayor Robinson, Rattlesnake Robinson, and I said, look, I can be particularly cautious about not going up to the podium to change tapes when there's speakers up there. I won't be going up to retrieve or to place a tape recorder when the speaker's up there. I don't mind being respectful, but I will be there, you know, with a tape recorder, if health permitting, because I think it's a basic right. And I think
the First Amendment, freedom of the press.
I mean, and of course...
You are the press, Robert. You do publish.
Yeah, but there are arguments against it that say, look, you know, it goes out as a video stream, so you can record it off the air. It's kept as a video archive later. You don't need to record it there.
You do have alternatives.
And my response was, well... Poor people don't have that necessarily those kinds of skills and access. And also, I think politicians need to be able to know that the media is watching them visibly. It has, a positive and salutary effect.
Also, I mean, if something does happen that's, you know, going to get them in all kinds of trouble, guess what? Tape will suddenly go missing. Unless it's your own tape, you know, their other tapes will disappear. Their emails disappear when you do your record request.
That's a good point. Yeah. And so that was the point I made. And I, not only did I send her this last email, but I also gave it to the city clerk, who I was, you know, on friendly terms with, fairly friendly terms. And...
Did she give you a hug?
She didn't give me a hug, no. I didn't ask for a hug at that point. But I then gave her a hard copy to give to Lynn Robinson as she came out of her closed city council session in the back room. And we're going to play maybe a little tape on that. Maybe not if we don't have time. We may not have time. And then, you know, I had two people videotaping the last council session from the audience. And I want to thank both of them. I want to thank Michael and thank Becky for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what turned the trick, but I put my tape recorder down. And nobody did anything. We kept an eye on the city clerk, who insisted she was going to jump up and remove it. She said so specifically in an email to me.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't do that. Good for her.
And yet they blinked.
Yes, they did blink. But of course, we just don't have to do this kind of shit every time.
Well, unfortunately,
I don't know.
What Jefferson says every 20 years.
Well, every 2 weeks is the question. It's not. I've often said city council meetings are generally a waste of time. In fact, I told this to the bike church's Steve Schnarr. This was something else that happened at city council.
Mm.
You know, the bike
He was at the protest tonight, by the way.
Oh, yeah, well, good. I'm glad people were raising these issues, and I probably should have been there myself.
But I was surprised you weren't, Rob.
Yeah, well, I mean, we publicized it. We put out some flyers about it. We talked. Tash reported on it at the Huff meeting, the St. Boris protest. For those who are interested in that protest, you can go to the website. Sinbaras, S-I-N-B-A-R-R-A-S. Just
they have meetings regularly at the Circle Church. Right?
And they have meetings regularly now at the Circle Church, and they also, I think, cook a meal at the Circle Church once a week or once a month. Let's turn now to some interviews, and maybe if you want to hang for a while, Mr. F., we can you can comment at some point about the interviews. If something comes up, you want to make a comment about it. And again, I want to remind listeners, there is a call-in number, 831-427-3772, 427-FRSC. We need a transmitter site anywhere in Santa Cruz. Let us know. Go to the website.
Desperately.
Freakradio.org.
Short of money. And what would really, really, really help the money problem is if we had a studio somewhere that was cheaper than $500 a month.
And that we need to. We both a problem.
That's where most of our money goes.
And our problem is not just
to the landlord.
But, you know, the problem also is we don't have a transmitter site. And right now we do, but it's really
sketchy.
It's sketchy. It's iffy. And I want to thank the people who are, you know, both letting us be there and those who are taking the time and trouble to set up the antenna and transmitter, knowing that at any moment may have to take it down again.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's, you know.
Well, you think it's important to be in the air. And it does, I mean, without it, all our members.
Yeah, we lose our people, and I think you lose the opportunity to hear this, because I don't know
Probably
if I...
Probably why I quit, too, yeah.
Yeah, and you did a good show. I thought,
well,
you know...
Well, one person was blocking. I wanted to put it back there months ago. One person was blocking, and that same person didn't want Becky in the studio without you here. So I said, at this point, you know, why is one person running this whole collective?
Mainly because that person does most of the work. So.
And the only one with the technical expertise
Right, and he eventually succumbed to people suggesting that, we got to get that transmitter back up again.
I tried to warn him earlier, but...
And we're not mentioning any names here, Uncle Dennis, so try to relax. Okay.
Well, he should actually have to pay some little extra money here, because really that's why everybody quit paying
He could pay the salaries of all the people who left the station because we weren't broadcasting, I suppose. But, you know, people...
No, we won't do that.
Yeah, well, you know, people also make decisions, and sometimes they're not the right decisions, and sometimes we don't agree with them. Let's hear some interviews from the Red Church, and maybe from you, 427-3772, and like that.
I'm talking with a man who's outside at the Red Church, actually on the sidewalk, puffing a cigarette, legally, I might add, on the sidewalk, leaning against a parking meter. It's 15 to 6. I'm talking with
Bill.
And Bill, we're talking about the balmy evening. It's kind of a pleasant, I don't know, what, 65 maybe evening?
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's spring, like spring weather.
And yet this contrast with...
Oh, in the mornings, I sit down to see the lighthouse field around that area there at the beach, and you wake up within just minutes before you get your bag together, your hands are in pain. It's that cold. It just gets colder and colder until about 8 o'clock. I mean, it's so freezing in the morning.
And are you often awakened by gendarmes?
The rangers come through. That's why you got to get up early anyway. So, I mean, it's actually the time when you'd rather sleep at least another hour.
Uh-huh.
At least. But no, it's time to get up. So usually you got to get up by 6, right in the middle of where it's freezing. It's like waking up at the coldest time.
And what general area are we talking about? You don't have to be specific.
West Cliff. Yeah.
And how many folks would you say are up in that area?
There's a few up in that area. Yeah.
And are you harassed during the night, or just have to get up early to avoid the rangers?
You're okay after 10 o'clock or so. After that,
right?
Between 10 and 6, you're okay.
Now, there are bathrooms up here that close at dusk.
They close at 8. They're closed. It's not earlier.
Go poo-poo outside on the can.
There's nothing. You'd have to go clear to nothing. I don't even know. It's in town, I guess. There's nothing out there.
Maybe they want you to water their gardens with weeds.
Yeah, they ought to have at least one pour, something like that, even if they only did it once a month or something. I don't know, but I guess they have one they could lock up during the day, open up at night, because that way during the day you wouldn't have a bunch of people coming in there. It'd be only people at night. No one's going to go in there, and they're not going to do anything. They're going to do the dark they can anyway. Just go to the bathroom. Somewhere place to, yeah.
That makes sense, Bill.
Yeah.
I agree.
All right.
And we've been talking with
Bill.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
Just wanted to mention that I'd heard, I'm not sure from where, whether it was secondhand from somebody listening to the city council meeting section that I didn't hear on Tuesday, that reportedly the doghouse porta potty or the homeless porta potty.
$15,000?
the $16,000 or $15,000 porta potty on the levee is going to be open next week.
You're kidding.
I don't know how accurate that is because I don't know exactly where it came from. We'll see if that happens. And again, I keep wondering why they don't spend the money to simply open the San Lorenzo Park bathroom.
Why 16? You can get one on. I saw on Google. I searched for porta potties. They're only $700. You know, somebody demolishes it. So what? That's barely what we pay for a week for some county employee or city employee. You know.
Well, it shows how irresponsible these needle-using prostitute vandals are.
Remember now, the people that were actually destroying the toilets are probably people who hate the homeless.
Well, they're also mainly people who are, drunk at night and using the bars and, supposedly contributing to the tax base of the city by spending money here. And I, I don't know. I do not have...
We don't know who's wrecking them.
Yeah, and we don't even know that the toilets are being regularly wrecked any more than they ever were.
Yeah, it's just staff bullshit.
That I don't know. And so I can't say whether it's bullshit or accurate, and we aren't. But the main thing, I don't like the idea of putting this whole thing hostage to whether,
it
gets wrecked or not. Because homeless people are under a lot of pressure, and then the pressure is intensifying. And so people express their anger in all kinds of ways, sometimes not particularly appropriate ways, but they do.
Vandalism is a traditional political statement.
It can be, and it's also a natural emotional expression, too.
Exactly.
And they steal all your stuff, you get pissed. Rather than go beating somebody up, you smash the sink. It's not going to be helpful because you won't be able to use the sink, but still.
Well, once again, Ed's porta potty and none of the Occupy porta potties had any problems. It basically, the city just can't run it. We need to be running the city instead of staff.
I think that I've also suggested that's the answer for police review. Police review can't be done by government agencies for all kinds of reasons. First, the police lobby is so strong, they've actually killed police review.
They have so many laws protecting them. They don't have to...
Personnel, confidential.
Everything.
But you can put up stuff on YouTube that shows Richard Hardy being slammed to the sidewalk by Officer Vasquez. If we can get, more testimony about Officer Hernandez, is smashing, not smashing, poking a gun in the back of Jasmine Byron at the Salvation Army in Thanksgiving, which is what three people reported happened.
That guy that beats up women?
And there's Officer Azua, who has reportedly trashed two women, one of them Cynthia Kennedy a couple years ago, and then more recently Brianna Brewer, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that was her name. And then there's now our latest officer, Barnett. He's not physically abusive that I've heard of. He just throws his weight around in the most literal sense. He's quite a portly fellow, even more so than I am. Fat power, boys. Come on, we can do it.
Hate speech?
I am not going to hate myself. I think as a fatty, I say, love me, love my love handles. That's where it is.
He's abusive? Verbally?
He has been abusive in terms of both attitude, verbally, according to the reports, and giving citations to people for things that other CSOs don't, such as no business license for showing jewelry for donation on Pacific Avenue, which drives him away because that's hundreds of dollars in fines. How are you going to argue against this in court with basket case?
Or Simons. He doesn't like loitering.
I don't know if Simons is...
it's felony.
I think it would go to Gallagher. What we're talking about here is if you want to disqualify the commissioner, it goes into the court of one of two judges in Department 1 or Department 2.
Connolly or Gallagher?
I think it's Connolly or Gallagher, correct. Yeah. It's probably somewhat...
Those are the most junior judges,
better prospects, but... it's
not with Gallagher. He gave Gary 2 years for sleeping.
Right, but that was a particularly strong political case. Whether this would happen as a matter of routine, I don't know. It might. I don't know. I know that basket case is Basket. Kim Basket is the
name
of the commissioner.
Very poor quality judges.
She's pretty bad. Yeah. But, it has to do with their collusion with the police, the DAs, and so forth.
Well, it's because they're elected. They're just as... sensitive to public opinion as everyone, and most of the public opinion is against the homeless in this town. So they're seen as a scapegoat.
I think the loudspeakering is against the homeless. I don't know if most people are against them.
Well,
although
most people don't care. Most people aren't involved.
Most people are oblivious to it. Yeah. But indeed, I think that this loudspeakering, this bullhorning, has had an impact. You know, I think people are now, it's becoming a baseline. Oh, well, we know that homeless people are either, you know, junkies, drug addicts, bums, mentally ill, or alcoholics.
Just crossing the street, I've noticed it. I mean, with a beard, I had to shave my beard off because people were trying to run me over, you know, from a standing stop because
I
was homeless. Yeah, just in the last couple of years, it's gotten that bad.
Well, I'm thinking of the last year in this public hysteria-generating task force, public safety task force, as they call it.
But they're on the ropes now since, Take Back Santa Cruz, especially since it's been found that they've been harboring child molesters among their ranks.
Well, one individual who was a
prominent member.
Well, he was a prominent member, but, you know, that's something that you can't hold other Take Back Santa Cruz people accountable for.
You can't, that's what they do.
I don't.
To us, so you just do the same.
Well, no, I'm not going to pull that kind of shit. I want to be honest in what I'm doing, not okay. Not stoop to conquer.
I believe in using propaganda.
Well, propaganda is good, but true propaganda, not bullshit.
Well, it's true. I mean, who knows how many?
No, it's
homeless.
It is true, but it's not true that there are child molesters in Take Back Santa Cruz. There was one, and prominently. But you know, I think if they'd known about that, they probably wouldn't have had. They would have told them to get hit the road. if only for PR purposes.
But the same thing happens to the homeless. I mean, they're not all junkies and thieves.
Oh, of course not.
But they get tarred that way.
Right. But that's why we want it. We want to say about what's really going on, whether it's with Take Back Santa Cruz or it's with the homeless. We want to have a source of sane, honest information for people, and that's what I try to do. I mean, there's sometimes when you have to be careful because we have to deal with a court system, and if you sometimes want to, you know, if you want to hold officers accountable, you can't expose all the details about what goes on, much as you'd like to, because that then provides them with an advantage in trying to confuse juries and with, you know, different accounts.
I'm not sure what you're saying here.
Well, what I'm saying is that the reason attorneys tell their clients, and Jonathan Gettleman, for example, and David Beauvais, two attorneys I know who I informed, their clients came to me and said, you know, I want to be on the air and talk about this case. I'd be very happy about that, but I want you to talk to your attorney first because, you know, A, you may upset your attorney, God help you.
Well, the trouble is, if you admit to any kind of a crime ever, that's admissible. It's not hearsay.
Also, if you say you're confused about something or you give an account that's slightly different, brought up in the court later. Although, you know, I think it's really true what judges often tell juries, which is just because you hear a person make some contradictory statements, it doesn't mean their account is unreliable. Just because a witness's accounts contradict each other doesn't mean somebody's necessarily lying. People see different parts of the elephant. They have different perceptions
forget,
at different
yeah.
times. They forget. They, you know, see different vantage points. Let's hear some more from the Red Church on Monday.
Talking with River Lightwolf. And River Lightwolf, we talked last time about how David at the library desk, the main library, denied you access to a handicapped bathroom. You're not handicapped, but the other bathroom was busy. Other librarians had been reasonable and allowed you to use the handicapped bathroom. You were sort of concerned about that attitude, as I remember.
Well, yes, I was majorly concerned because there was a long line at the regular public bathroom, which only has one commode and one urinal. And actually, I am handicapped, and I have been for over 15 years and even plus. But I have incontinence and irritable bowel syndrome, and I really needed to go. I don't always use the handicapped bathroom if I need to, but I needed to use it that day, and the guy just looked at me when I asked him for the key, because like I had said in the last report, was that the week before, the gal had gave it to me when there was a line at the other bathroom, and it was no problem. So I asked
this. You told her or him that you were handicapped?
No, and they didn't ask. She didn't ask. So I guess the second time I went up there, I assumed that it was just part of the policy that if it's busy at the other one, that they let people in. And I was trying to do a little bit of research today online and found out that there's quite a debate over it about, you know, do people actually have a legal access to go into the bathroom, or do they have to whip out their show? Do they have to be on a walker or in a wheelchair or what, you know? They didn't ask me anything about that. I have traumatic brain injury from a long time ago. I have back and neck problems. I have incontinence, you know, a lot of major things going on. Those guys basically stereotyped me. They profiled me as somebody that is not, almost seems unwelcome there because I don't get a good welcome vibe there. And then I thought about it later and I thought, well, just because I don't usually use the handicap bathroom, I do have my Medicare card and I have my discount camping card and other things, and I thought, what do I need to say? Do I have to be in a walker, or are they supposed to ask me, or do they just deny anybody just by the way they look or something? What is the legal status on this? You know, am I? What is their problem?
Well, it's, you know, this is an interesting question. I know a guy called John Colby has been trying to advocate for disabled people, or just people, you know, I mean, disabled, where there are many different kinds of disabilities. Some of them are visible, some of them are not, but they're all presumably real enough to the people who have them, and as you would know yourself, I assume.
Yes, absolutely. This has been a long time running thing, you know. My bladder incontinence, you can only hold it for so long. And this guy, David, at the desk is saying, well, there's another bathroom over there at the parking garage. And, you know, I said, yeah, I know where that's at, but I got to go now. And he's shaking his head, and then he run, kind of waltzes off to the back room. And I said, well, I'm gonna file a report, man, because this don't seem right. And
we were talking about that, but you, at that time we spoke, a few days ago, you hadn't yet decided to file the report.
No, and I don't really want to. I think hopefully Santa Cruz Free Radio should be enough to bring it to people's attention, some kind of awareness. You know, maybe I should file a report.
You should.
And I'm going to interrupt River Light Wolf's account of bathroom discrimination at the library because we have a caller. Hi, caller.
How you doing?
I'm good. Any thoughts on? Have you been listening to the show, or is this a cold call?
This is a cold call.
Okay, well, what you got for us, cold guy?
Well, I wanted to talk about the bike distribution in the city of Santa Cruz there.
Oh, I recognize your voice. Now, I'm sorry. Identify yourself, please, for our audience, if you're willing.
My name is Lorenzo. I run the bike check program in Watsonville. We're good friends with the bike church. The bike church helped us establish our bike co-op in Watsonville about 7 years now, going on 8 years in June 5th, actually.
Tell us a little bit about the bike shack in Watsonville.
Well, a couple of people from the bike church decided they would like to help out South County, so they approached a couple of people and along with some other friends, and they started doing the bike shack out of a small green toolbox, and then it eventually grew to what we have now, a little small warehouse.
What does the bike shack actually do for folks? What kind of services do you provide?
Well, we provide free helmets to the county of Santa Cruz. We're the site to fit free helmets. They're pretty much free. We just want to make sure everyone has a helmet and safe out there. So we're actually
free
site
helmets,
to
yeah
the county.
Uh-huh.
You gotta get certified, kind of take a class. So if you come down to the bike shack, you'll see me, Lorenzo, and I'm a certified helmet fitter. People would think, you know, everything about a helmet, and even I did, but when I went to the class, I learned a lot.
So it's a little hard to hear you. It's a choppy line we have, but maybe talk a little more slowly. Maybe I can catch some of it. So, bike shack for a number of years, inspired by the bike church in Santa Cruz, has provided free helmets. What else have you provided?
We donate approximately about 500 to 600 bikes a year to many organizations, people that might not be able to have, you know, funds. You know, the way our program works is that, you know, if they don't have any funds, they can volunteer. We always need help. We always need, you know, people to help us take care of the bikes. You know, we do many events, you know, in the community, so we always need help. So if people don't have funds, you know, we just ask for a small donation. Most of the bikes are donated by the community, so we want to extend our hand and
You know, we know a family that's one in need, and we, you know, we'll help them out. We'll give them a bike too, as well. Now, if anyone's in a program, we, you know, like a rehab program or anything like that, trying to get back on their feet, and they have a letter from the counselor or something, we'll give them a free bike.
Do your bikes, Lorenzo, come from the Watsonville Police Department? Do they come from Santa Cruz? Where do they originally come from?
Well, we do get some from the city of Watsonville, but we also we have gotten some bikes from the bike church through the police department. So what the bike church does, we're one of the agencies we work with, and they call us up, hey, come by, and we have some bicycles for you guys.
Now, Lorenzo, of course, you know, you and I have gone to the same city council meetings. We ran into each other on Tuesday, and you know, chatted, had dinner afterward, and expressed some mutual concerns, to say the very least, about not just how the police department, which apparently 2 years ago abruptly and without explanation stopped providing bikes, the disabled, discarded, unwanted bikes that were unusable, really, to the bike church for distribution to you and other groups, and instead then started funneling them to the Bike Dojo, which is a for-profit group run by Rob Miles and his partner, who seems a lot nicer than Rob, I might add. I ran into Rob at the farmer's market yesterday and said hello. He said hello. We didn't snap or bite each other in passing, but I told him, I should have told him, invited him to be on the air to debate you, which would have been interesting. But, you know, one of the issues for me has been, why did the police department suddenly stop giving bikes to the bike church? And I've heard speculation. I wasn't sure if it was from, I don't know, Don Lane, the council member, or Micah Posner, another council member and a people power activist, or Steve Schnarr, a bike church worker who has on occasion, you know, sort of raised these issues strongly and said, why aren't we getting the bikes? Because for 2 years, the Santa Cruz Police Department has held up, stonewalled, blockaded, bike-napped the bikes. And what's the reaction of your organization been to this police department behavior in Santa Cruz?
We're actually kind of shocked, you know, that it's gone this far, and we're kind of dumbfounded by the whole city and how they kind of like weaseled the way out of giving them to the bike church, and it's kind of like no explanation. I don't really know the whole logistics, but what I know is from what I've seen firsthand, when we put an email out asking organizations to give bikes, and we got approached by some people we know, and we went to go to a big giant warehouse where the Bike Dojo were storing these bikes, and I know personally because I was there, and it was told to us, we need to get rid of these bikes. So I said, oh, sure, no problem. So we had barely any bikes at the bike shack.
Who, now this and, is, about what, do you remember what month and what year this was that you were advised about this?
This is about a year and a half ago.
So this was in 2012?
Yeah, yes.
And at this time, again, what I understood was that from other sources is the Bike Dojo was accused of essentially profiteering off the bikes and violating city law, as well as engaging in nepotistic behavior because their partners with mayor or vice mayor Bryant's. She was vice mayor, I guess, in 2012, and mayor in 2013. Her spouse, who was, that there were these improprieties involved in the Bike Dojo, plus the fact that the bikes were not getting to nonprofits and weren't getting to poor people and weren't getting where they had previously been getting after through the bike church distribution. And so this happened 6 months after you stopped receiving bikes from the bike church. And so this large warehouse, was run by George Au or something, one of his warehouses, or?
Yeah, well, that's the Wrigley building. I'm not sure who actually owns it, but that's where we went to go get the bikes at, and two other bike shack employees.
What organization or individual advised you that these bikes, which the Bike Dojo was storing there supposedly, were available for you to take?
I can't comment on that because I'm not exactly sure if the person wants me to.
Fair enough.
Put them out there.
Keeping some names, you know? Hidden away there, Lorenzo? Okay. No, I mean, that's... That, yeah, okay.
No, I'm just being respectful because, you know,
it's about partnership. It's about relationship, and the way it was handled, and the way it was. How can I say this without being so abrupt? It was, the bike dojo was kind of not too friendly to me, so I had a.
You mean he acted like an asshole? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, he was. You know, don't disrespect him. I wish him all as well as a human being, but you get in my face, I'm gonna let you know where I'm coming from.
I mean, I've played Rob Miles's. Very nasty, abrupt, peppery personal attacks on the air before, and he's fast and he's nasty, and I mean that's my analysis of Rob Miles, and he's welcome to come on the air, and if I can I can stand him for a while, maybe, I don't know, I'll have you in the studio to buffer me, or maybe you can in any case,
yeah.
The reason I ask. Did you get authorization? How did you get authorization to take these bikes from the warehouse, or what? You know, I mean, and
yeah, we got authorization to take them from the warehouse. Me and my friend, we rented a U-Haul and we took some tools and we fit the bikes in like Tetris, and we're able to get a lot of bikes to the kids in Watsonville.
And so you got the bikes and started distributing them.
What was that?
You got the bikes and started distributing them, or you were preparing to do that? What? Where are we at on this?
Well, since we got the bikes, yeah, we started, nonprofit set us up, and in Watsonville, they do fundraisers, so we give them bikes, even up at a couple organizations up at UCSC. They hit us up, we give them bikes. The bike co-op there in Santa Cruz, they give bikes to many organizations, just as the bike church and the co-op at Cabrillo College as well.
So now let me understand it, though. You were advised, here's a whole bunch of bikes sitting around in this warehouse. Come and get them. Is that right?
Correct.
And so did you come and get them?
Yeah, we did. We did. And
how many bikes are we talking about?
I don't know. We filled up the U-Haul. The U-Haul was pretty packed up. I mean, there was probably
50, 100, 500.
If I remember correctly, it was about 70 to 80 bikes.
Okay. So, and what percentage of that was the total number of bikes that were left behind that you were going to pick up later?
The rest of the bikes, some of them mostly were just pretty much good bikes. You just got, the thing was, as bike mechanic myself, you kind of know, you got to know some things to fix some of these bikes, and it looks like they're just like taking parts off and not really knowing the mechanics of it. I'm not trying to house anybody or they didn't know how. Just from my experience working on bikes for many years, that's what I saw.
I'm sorry. Free has a question for you here.
So you're saying that the bike dojo was picking parts off them but weren't doing it as well as the bike church used to do. Is that what you're saying? They didn't know what they were doing when they were taking the parts off.
No, it didn't seem like that to me because if you work on bikes, you try to make it work, and you try to fit another part, and then you recycle.
Uh-huh.
And the rest of the sometimes you get bikes that, people out there in the radio land, you need to know, like, some bikes are just
trash.
They're cheap bikes.
Yeah.
They're cheap parts, so they're junk bikes. The big corporations sell them really dirt cheap, yeah, but the parts really, they don't last that long.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I'm trying to understand, how many bikes were left behind that you didn't take from the warehouse?
That were still usable.
Well, there was a lot of bikes there, because what happened was, the next day, me and my friends from the bike church, we went there, and we had one load, and a whistleblower jumped the gun, and something happened, and the bike dojo guy was all over me.
This is Rob Miles?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. What did he
got a call from the city saying that this is a spirit campaign, and I had to tell them, I said, no, our relationship with the bike church is that, they're our friends, they helped us get started, so...
Well, let me understand this. You took one load of bikes away, came back the next day, take another load, authorized by the people who ran the warehouse and who were in possession of the bikes, is that correct?
Correct.
And at that point, Rob Miles, who was no longer in possession of the bikes, but who had originally, instead of giving them away to nonprofits or poor people, had simply stashed them in this warehouse, came down in an angry mood and demanded you stop doing that. Is that correct?
Well, they stopped us, yeah. We only did one load on the second day.
And he stopped you because he was able to persuade the person who had authorized you removing them to stop the authorization?
Yeah, because I thought it was a spirit campaign because of the bike church. Someone from the bike church called to the city, and the city called him saying, hey, these bikes are not, and this is real. I hope everyone's listening. They did not want the bike church to have the bikes.
So in other words, I understand it. Steve Schnarr, our whistleblower guy, who I have a lot of respect for otherwise, contacted Micah Posner, the city council member, who I'm getting less and less respect for.
You're just guessing here.
No, I'm not. This is previous information that I got. Who then was stupid enough to call Miles of the bike dojo, who then rushed down and stopped the bikes from being distributed a year and a half ago. Is that accurate?
Yeah, well, this is what they was told to me. And I'll repeat it. And I'll tell anyone that wants to talk to me.
So
we need to get rid of the bikes. I said, okay, I could do that part, no problem.
So that was only 60 of the. How many bikes were left 80. Behind that you were not 60 to 80 of the bikes that? How many bikes were left that you were not able to get rid of because these. I don't want to say these idiots, because I like these guys in other ways. These, you know, misguided politicians or people working with politicians were trying to use some sort of other road to say, rather than just, you know, distribute the damn bikes. They didn't want to, I don't know, offend.
Why would Posner call him? I don't get it.
Do you have any indication why Councilmember Posner decided to inform Miles of this whole thing? Or did he? Was he the person who informed the bike dojo?
I just know what was told to me, and they said that I don't know. You know, I don't like to hear hearsay, but they were saying that let's see, was it Micah?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That he jumped the gun, and I hope I get to see him in person. I would like to talk to him myself.
I'm going to give him a call right now and put him on the
no,
air.
No, I'd rather do it in person. I'm not going to do it over the radio.
Sure, I'll do that after you're off the air, because I want to get a statement from him on what the hell he did. Because
it is what it is, and it's already gone and done. And
well, no, I got to tell you, it isn't over yet, because a year ago,
it's still going on.
I mean, you know, 6-7 months ago, he said he'd solve the problem because he got the city manager to agree to not send the bikes back to the bike church, which he should have done, and explain what the fuck the police department was doing stopping this, and who was blocking the whole thing, and why it was going to this questionable for-profit business, and why we can't get the public records on it, all these issues, which I think also needed to be explored.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing I think that everyone needs to know, the whole audience, is that the city of Santa Cruz, the police department involved, they're auctioning off these bicycles.
Right. Right, I understand.
How are you going to auction off the bicycles of the people that don't have that much money, kids, that we need to give them something to do, need these bikes? Because when you have a bike, you have a sense of freedom.
Oh, absolutely.
You're less dependent on cars, fuel, fossil fuels and stuff. So, you know, it's like, you know, it comes to a point and it is, you know, get your shit together. Well, you guys are adults here.
I wouldn't, well... Yeah, but they're corrupt adults. How many bikes were you giving away when everything was fine and you got them from the bike church versus how many after they cut them off? I mean, how many kids were not getting bikes after the cops stopped giving
bikes? Well, put it this way. After the year and a half, we have not gotten any bikes at all.
So you were giving away 400, 400 or 500 a year or something, you were saying?
Yeah, we give them, you know, average about 500 to 600 every year that we give away.
Over 2 years, that's over 1,000 kids that won't be getting bikes because of the Santa Cruz Police Department.
It could be kids, it could be adults, you know. It's not just always kids, too, you know. There's adults as well.
You asked me a moment ago, we're talking with Lorenzo of the Bike Shack in Watsonville, for those of you who just tuned in, and the scandal that the city council and the city staff, manager Martine, Tina Shul,
and
Scott Collins, and Police Chief Kevin Vogel, and, I don't know, Deputy Chief Steve Clark have been apparently shutting down, repressing, concealing about the police department's refusal to allow bikes to that have been damaged and given to the police department or abandoned to go to the bike church, which is what was going on for 4 or 5 years, 5 or 6 years before that, and abruptly cut off.
His group and other groups.
And also to your group, the Bike Shack, because you got them through the bike church. You were talking about how six months after they cut this off and instead started sending these bikes to the bike dojo, instead of it was A, selling them, but B, also stashing them in a huge warehouse, mm-hmm. in Watsonville and then didn't want them there. I mean, they apparently the owner
to fix up
Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz.
A lot of them are damaged and need to be fixed.
So this was in Santa Cruz, not in Watsonville?
Correct.
Okay, sorry about that. In Santa Cruz, but you're a Watsonville group, and you were working on that. And and you asked, you know, what's the difference? You know, why should we be concerned about the history of this part of it? And I guess I would say I'm concerned about people like Micah Posner reassuring us than the city manager, as he did last summer, a year later, after you were still, you know, bikeless for a year and a half, in the summer of 2013, he finally said he'd solve the problem because the city manager had declared they would set up a call for proposals for nonprofits to get the bikes. Not that they would restore them to the bike church and to you, the bike shack. But they would simply set up a call for proposals. And so this was essentially a cover job, suggesting that there was some legitimacy to taking them away, when there's no indication there was any legitimacy to that I'm aware of. I think the police department gave a couple of pretexts. Oh, it was a scheduling problem. Oh, you know, scrap iron problem, you know. And I think Steve Schnarr, to his credit, he effectively clarified that was not the case, that the police department never came to the bike church to say what their problems were. They just shut them down. Presumably, he thought, for the reason that the bike church is situated next to the Sub Rosa Cafe, which has an anarchist bookshop, and does not welcome police officers in their, or, you know,
on their
premises unless they have a search warrant. Right. You know, I mean, and so, you know, it seems to me that then all these activists from the bike church, let's be generous and call them activists, went down last summer and said, you know, at Oral Communications, please, please give us our bikes. We're a great group. We're a fine group. Here are all these organizations. They say we've done good things, which they have. And Micah Posner said, well, when are you going to do that, city manager? And the city manager, Martinez, says, well, it's in the works. And then they kept getting these, next August, September. This is Scott Collins, who's the city council assistant to the city manager. And then Tina Shule, assistant city manager, in November. Oh, it'll be on the agenda in December. Oh, well, no, it'll be on the agenda in January. And, of course, and now it's been kicked to the second agenda, if it's there at all.
Well, remember, all their kids have
coming
bikes,
up on Tuesday,
so they don't give a fuck.
The 28th. But my point is, as I think you just heard from my co-host here, that the people aren't getting these bikes. You know, that people who need them, who could use them, aren't getting these bikes. Mm-hmm. What do other members of your organization think about this, Lorenzo?
Well, they pretty much feel the same way I do, because we've talked about it extensively. You know, we think it could be done in a good way. But the thing is that, you know, no disrespect to the Republicans or Democrats out there, but nothing is done. Everyone wants to fight. And, you know, what kind of world is this when they keep fighting back and forth and nothing gets done? You know, it's about humans, taking care of humans. That's what our nonprofit's about. That's what other nonprofits are about. You know, and if you're not here to help people, you're hindering people, and that is not something you do as a human being.
Are the bikes still sitting in that warehouse, going nowhere, gathering dust?
No, they're probably pretty much taken out because, from my understanding, that the people that own it, they're renting. They sold the space, or leasing the space out to an organization. That's the reason why they had to get them out.
And so instead they're being auctioned off in Sacramento by the cops? Is that what's going on?
I don't know exactly where it's at, but that was the information that was shared with me.
Yeah, I mean, I can't get a straight answer out of... We've sought public records for the last 2 years, and we get complete bullshit from former Mayor Bryant, claiming that she'd had no... Well, I mean, let me put it this way. It certainly seems to me like complete bullshit that there is no interaction whatsoever between any city staff and the police department around the bikes, which I think is highly unlikely, you know.
The thing is, if that's the case, where are all the bikes closed for the past year and a half?
Can anybody find the bike? Maybe we should call Inspector Clouseau of the French Sûreté to find out where the bikes have gone, and perhaps he can track them down, you know. Lorenzo, any other thoughts on this you want to pass on? Anything? I'm particularly pissed with activists who are, instead of holding press conferences on the steps of the city, of the police department, or wheeling their bikes into the lobby of the police department and doing a bike around in the police department lobby, doing something that would indicate, you know, we're not just going to sit around and believe more bullshit from the city manager's office that we're going to deal with this when it's not being dealt with, because they want to protect the ass of the police department and of the bike dojo. Activists in Santa Cruz don't seem willing to want to do anything about this. I talked to Steve Schnarr yesterday, and he was saying, well, you know, nobody really, you know, these are ineffective tactics. You know, you do a little protest and nothing happens, you know, and you know, I don't know. You know, I mean, I understand small protests can be discouraging. But what do you think your suggestion is in this situation, Lorenzo? What you been, are you, for that matter, Mr. F, here in the studio?
My suggestion, you know, at this point, it's kind of like, it's like a catch-22, you know. It's either damned if you do, damned if you don't, you know. And I think it can happen. I think people just need to, activists, I don't know, the word activist has changed in the past years. Mm-hmm. You know, what is an activist? You know, is it one that speaks and does something, or someone that talks less and gets stuff done, you know? So, you know,
well,
we can hear and sit down here and talk all this, and the city can talk all this, but actions speak louder than all the words.
Not too many achievists out there.
Well, I mean, again, I guess it's a matter of how to proceed. And this is a controversy, for example, in the sanctuary camp struggle and the warming center.
Yeah,
I mean, how effective are protests in dealing with these issues? And I think we got to try a variety of avenues. But to keep trying kiss the ass of the bureaucrats as your main strategy and try to be nice to the mayor or try to be nice to the police chief. Well, of course,
to my view, these are criminals. Are we nice to criminals?
Do
you have any bikes to give away? At all? Can you hear me?
Lorenzo, he asks, do you have any bikes at all to give away?
We have some bikes because, you know, what happens is when things happen like this, we start making relationships with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And other people, like, you know, there's people in Watsonville, longtime bike activists, and we end up doing events with them, and that's how we make relationships. So in essence, it really hasn't stopped. You know, I wish we would get more bikes, but it just has a way it works out. You know, you'd be amazed. A lot of people know about us, and other people, you know, other things we do trade, you know. Like if someone has a bike, and maybe we have a bike kind of like fixed up, they'll need, you know, two bikes or one that's, you know, kind of working because they don't know how to work on them or whatever. Because a lot of these kids, a lot of adults, they want something to do. I mean, we don't turn down anyone that wants to come and volunteer that wants something to do in this world, you know. We said, sure, come on down to the bike shack, sign in, you know, keep track of our hours, you know, and figure it out. You know, we actually sit down with them, and sometimes we'll talk about their life experience with them, you know, or what they're going through, and actually talk with them a little bit as well, you know, share what we have and just listen, you know, because a lot of times just need someone to listen to that. That's
but
a simple thing,
no,
but it goes a long way.
I'm concerned with the crap that the city is throwing in the way of this. That's what this show is about.
Well, the reason I ask the question is, if they have a bike, I mean, instead of just holding up a sign, why not just give away a bike to some kids or in front of the police station and draw attention that way?
Yeah,
you could do
a bike distribution in front of the police station. I think that would be an excellent way to do it.
That'd
be a good idea.
Helping somebody, and the police are taking bikes away from kids. I mean, you have to make it very clear so people understand it, because they're just inundated with all kinds of information from the internet and stuff. You really have to make it graphically, because the city would just like this issue to go away. That's why Robert says they keep delaying it, and we're going to get to it, blah, 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 and nothing ever happens. The kid doesn't get the bike, you know, in the long run.
Right, and more important, this kind of crap it becomes a precedent, and this is really part of a broader campaign, I think, against homeless and poor people, and against people of an anarchist ideology, for that matter.
Sure.
You know, and people who want to empower and enable the homeless. Lorenzo, I'm running out of time. Anything you want to conclude with?
No, just people out there, write to your city officials, let them know, let your friends know that, you know, we need to get these bikes to kids and to people less unfortunate that might not be able to afford a bicycle. And, you know, ride your bike. Have a good day. It's been nice today. Get out and ride.
Yeah, I think you're right, but I think writing to city officials, as we've seen, goes absolutely nowhere. What you need to do is organize people in these bike groups.
Threaten their reputations.
I think Mr. F's idea of an actual bike distribution in front of the police department or the city manager's office is the way to do it, and I would love to see that organized. Let me know if anything starts to happen that way, and if you like that idea, put it forward to the Bike Shack group and see what they think.
Right on.
Hey, I appreciate it, and give my regards to Cindy.
All right, if you're ever in Watsonville, come down to the bike shack.
Hey, man, I need a bike. I'll talk to you about it.
Right on.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you.
And, one time I did have a bike. I think I tried it at least twice. I mean, you know.
It's hard to get a hug on a bike.
We can manage it, I think.
You can't fit all that many decals on a bike either.
So I think in a moment we're going to have the evil Uncle Dennis barging in here trying to justify his abusive treatment of Free Radio for the last 6 months. And I'm going to have to leave. But actually, Uncle Dennis actually does... He does do a lot of work for the station.
More work than anyone else.
He does. And I really appreciate the work he does do. When we're in trouble, we call Dennis. We say, help, what do we do? Tell us for the 15th time how to actually get this together. And he patiently does, sometimes impatiently.
He is very patient.
And not sometimes he is and sometimes he isn't. I'm going to have to continue this conversation on Sunday. I am going.
What are you going to be covering on Sunday?
I'm going to be covering more of these issues, the bike church, the city council issues, a lot of reports from the street about abusive behaviors against homeless people, and the library, the bathrooms. What a bunch of horse shit, or just shit, you know. And if you run into any of these problems or you have something you want to report, please call the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, or post it on IndieBay or video. That's even better. Post a video count of what goes on YouTube and link it to IndieBay or send a link.
They hate video. The police don't like your videoing.
And the police don't like the video.
The bureaucrats will walk away if they're recording them. I mean, that's the thing. Transparency, they're scared of it.
And maybe we'll have Free back on the air. Sorry, I exposed your secret identity. Talking about these issues.
I have no self.
Yeah, and we'll see how that goes. I will be going up to San Francisco, I believe, tomorrow to the protest from 12 to 4. Decriminalize the homeless isn't going to be a statewide rally, but it's going to be centered in San Francisco.